You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings 12, this is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Switching things up a bit this week, I'll be chatting with Sosa Cremenges of Locked On Rams for a special Crossover Wednesday episode previewing this week's NFC West matchup between the Seahawks and the Rams. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's a new week, but as far as injuries go, the Seahawks are as banged up as they have been all season long, gearing up for their Week 10 battle against the Rams, a tough road game, interdivisional opponent that the Seahawks are very familiar with. And the worst part is the Rams are coming off their bye week, so the Rams are going to be much healthier going into this game. Seattle had 21 players on the injury report on Wednesday. They had 8 players sidelined, including running backs Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, as well as cornerback Shaquille Griffin and Quentin Dunbar. But maybe the most pressing one to start off looking at this injury list, Ethan Posick, who played the entire game against the Bills on Sunday, was a new addition to the injury report on Wednesday. Apparently, he has a concussion. Now, this is not good news, because B.J. Finney was the backup to Ethan Posick. Those two competed against each other in training camp, and Finney was part of the trade to acquire Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals a few weeks ago. So he is no longer on the roster. Kyle Fuller is the only other center on Seattle's roster. In a normal season, Seattle would have some intriguing options to be able to bring into the last minute if they felt they needed to get some depth at the center position. Justin Britt still remains unsigned. Seattle had 2 visits with him during training camp, but opted not to sign him. Was a starter for the Seahawks for several seasons at the center position, so that would be an ideal one. But the 6-day period that every player has to get through testing for COVID-19 would make it impossible for him to be able to play on Sunday. The same goes for Joey Hunt, who started 8 games for the Seahawks, replacing Britt last year after he tore his ACL. Hunt went to the Colts after being released by the Seahawks. He is now on the Colts practice squad. Again, in a normal season, the Seahawks could go poach him off the Colts practice squad and sign him, and you know he would know the plays. He could step right in and start for the Seahawks. But again, that COVID-19 testing protocol looms large, so they're not going to be able to bring in an outside player at that center position. It's going to be Kyle Fuller if Ethan Posick cannot play this weekend. So his status is up in the air. Don't know what it looks like as far as his concussion is concerned. Again, he played every snap for the Seahawks on Sunday, so this was an unexpected listing on the injury report. A couple other new players on the list. Defensive tackle Brian Monet. Pete Carroll talked about him earlier this week. He's got a high ankle sprain. Does not sound like he's going to be back in the next couple of games. I'd be very surprised if he's able to play this week. Damon Harrison, Pete Carroll basically said today, he is going to be brought up. So Harrison will finally get a chance to make his Seahawks debut, with Monet being sidelined. KJ Wright was also out of practice on Wednesday with an ankle sprain. His sounds like it's a less severe one. They're going to take it easy with him for a day or two. I would anticipate that he's going to be ready to go. His is of the low ankle sprain variety, and again, not as significant. Benson Maioa was out again today. He's missed the last 2 games with an ankle injury. He's really fighting to get back, according to Pete Carroll. So they've got some guys that were out today that certainly have an opportunity to get back this week. Where things really get interesting are the injury situations in the backfield as well as the secondary. Starting with the running backs, Chris Carson, according to Pete Carroll today, is going to have a chance to run here the next few days. Not practicing today, probably not going to practice tomorrow, probably like last week, where they're looking at getting him out in the field potentially on Friday to see if he has a chance to play against the Rams on Sunday. He's had a few big games in the past against the Rams. It would be nice to get him back, but if you can't, Carlos Hyde is also a player with 1,000-yard pedigree last season for the Texans. If that's your fallback option, he's been dealing with a hamstring injury. It sounds like Carson has a better chance to get back this week, but again, both these guys' situations right now with their injuries are pretty fluid. So, remains to be seen. As for now, DJ Dallas is in line to get his third straight start. And they've also got the opportunity potentially to bring up Alex Collins again. They did sign Bo Scarborough to their practice squad, so maybe he's the guy that gets elevated this weekend. The Seahawks have some options there, but they would love to have Chris Carson or Carlos Hyde in this game to bolster their rushing attack. And in the secondary, I'm more pessimistic about the status of Griffin and Dunbar. Griffin's been out for a couple of weeks. He at least is through his concussion protocol now. He's just dealing with a hamstring issue that's bugged in the last couple of weeks. Just like Carson Carroll said, he's going to be running the next few days. Wasn't out there on the practice field on Wednesday. He's maybe got a fighting chance to get back. Quentin Dunbar is the one that is the most perplexing and maybe the most difficult to figure out what's going to happen there, because he's been dealing with a chronic knee issue most of the season. He missed 2 games in week 3 and week 4. He has started every game since, but it seems like his play has gradually gotten worse each week. And then Sunday against Buffalo, that was the worst game that I've ever seen Quentin Dunbar play, and you can tell he's not close to 100%. So the Seahawks have been put in a position here. Do you want to continue to put him out there when he's not healthy? Or is this an injury that isn't going to get better by resting him for a few more weeks? Because if this is something that's just going to continue to be a problem the rest of the season, Trey Flowers is playing much better the last couple weeks. It feels like if that's what's going on here and the Seahawks are not confident that Quentin Dunbar is going to be able to get back to close to full health at any point this season, they'd probably be better off just going with the 2 starting corners that they had the last 2 seasons and just see if they can get better production with Griffin coming back healthy here in the next week or two and Trey Flowers, who's playing some of the best football of his career the last couple of weeks. Nonetheless, there's a chance that Dunbar and Griffin could be both out against the Rams, which means DJ Reed or Ryan Neal are 2 options Pete Carroll said are on the table to play the other outside cornerback position. They also have Nico Thorpe coming back potentially. He was designated to return from injured reserve. So they have some options, but it's obviously not what the Seahawks would like to have going up against a Rams offense with a lot of weapons on the outside and a quarterback in Jared Goff that has consistently played his best football against Pete Carroll's defense. You'd like to have at least one of those starting corners, if not both, but there's a chance neither will be able to play this weekend. Definitely a dire situation in the secondary for the Seahawks. Coming up next in the second quarter, I'm going to be joining forces with Locked On Rams host Sosa Cremenges, and we're going to break down this week's NFC West matchup. Looking forward to sharing our insight on both teams heading into their first matchup of the 2020 season. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Protecting my family is my number one priority, but I want to do it safely. The people at Taser believe that safer self-defense is better self-defense. Taser's line of non-lethal self-protection devices are small and lightweight enough to carry with you or in your glove compartment or purse. Yet they're powerful enough to incapacitate an attacker. Guns carry unnecessary risks for you and those around you, and even pepper spray can harm you as much as an attacker, and it's often ineffective. Taser products are safer and easy to use. They use an electrical charge to immobilize attackers for up to 30 seconds, allowing you time to escape and send emergency dispatch to your GPS location. Taser devices come loaded with features like laser-assisted targeting, emergency dispatch, which will send response teams to your GPS location upon firing. More than 237,000 lives have been saved with a Taser network of devices, apps, and personnel. And now you can own a Taser, the number one choice of law enforcement agencies. Protect yourself and your family with Taser's line of smart self-defense products. Taser is available without a permit in most U.S. states. Get the Taser Pulse Plus or Taser Strike Light at Taser.com with promo code NFL. Save 15% now at Taser.com, promo code NFL. Spelled Taser.com, promo code NFL. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Locked On Rams listeners and Locked On Seahawks listeners, welcome to your crossover edition special of these 2 podcast episodes here. I'm joined by Corbin Smith, the host of the Locked On Seahawks. And as you guys know, I am Sosa Cremenges, your host of the Locked On Rams podcast. And ahead of the Week 10 matchup between the Los Angeles Rams and the Seattle Seahawks, we've got this crossover episode here today to kind of educate you guys on both sides. And you guys probably have a pretty good idea of what's going to come here with the Rams and the Seahawks, as they are divisional rivals and they do play two times a year. But with that being said, my man Corbin, how are you feeling today? And are you ready for Week 10?
It's crazy to say that we're in Week 10 already, with this being a season that's been so tremendously impacted by COVID-19. And I feel like we are just getting started with that, the way this week has gone for not just the NFL, but the country. So hopefully we can get through the rest of this season. And up to this point, there have been a few hitches, but they've been able to pull off the season for the most part. So for that, as a football fan, I'm grateful.
Absolutely. You know, I feel we're pretty lucky to have made it this far. Like you said, you know, this year feels like it's flying by, the season. I can't believe we're already in Week 10. But, you know, this is where the fun starts in the NFC West. The Rams have only played one game in the division, and the Seahawks, I believe, have only played one game as well against the Cardinals. And correct me if I'm wrong on that. But, you know, that means there's a lot of interdivisional rivalries going to happen here in the second half of the schedule. But before we get into all that, I've got some interesting questions for you to just help educate the Locked On Rams listeners as to what they can expect from the Seahawks, you know, in Week 10 here, because this Seahawks team feels a little bit different than, you know, they have in years past. As this first question goes here, you know, they used to be, or at least it felt like they were, a run-based offense. And, you know, they've taken kind of a different step into a different direction this season with the whole let Russ cook movement. And so, you know, how have they been able to kind of transition from that run-based offense that we all sort of knew them as to, you know, this explosive passing offense under, you know, the tutelage of a guy like Russell Wilson?
Well, it really hasn't just been a one-year process. If you look at what's happened under Brian Schottenheimer in his three seasons as offensive coordinator, which, by the way, I do still believe he should be on the short list for head coaching candidates this year. He has been impressive, and I can't believe I'm still saying that, because when they hired him, I really questioned that hire as the offensive coordinator, but he's done an outstanding job. And last year, you could see the shift was starting to come. They passed the ball a lot more on early downs. They still were a very run-oriented football team in 2019, but you could see there were signs they were going to put the ball into Russell Wilson's hands more. And this year, they have taken that movement and they've gone to another level. Now, last week, you got to see the downside of that. When your defense isn't able to stop anybody, you fall behind 17-0 and you become one-dimensional. Seattle's offensive line has been a big part of the reason that they have been able to let Russell Wilson drop back and throw the football more, and then he's had time to get the ball to his star receivers and make those downfield throws that he's so good at. And last week, they were put in a position where the offensive line had blitzers coming, extra guys coming on pressure. They were just put in a really bad spot. So they had their worst game of the season pass protecting Russell Wilson. For the rest of the year, they've been really good up front. So that's played a big role in it. Obviously, they've had some injuries at running back too. And so I think there have been a few games that Pete Carroll would have liked to get the run game going more, but they're missing Chris Carson. They're missing Carlos Hyde. Travis Homer was banged up for a couple weeks. They've had a rookie in DJ Dallas back there. And so there are a number of different factors at play here. This is something that they've been building up to. And now that you've got two superstar receivers on the outside, Russell Wilson in the middle of his prime, and he finally has an offensive line that can consistently protect him, and the fact that they're playing in shootouts seemingly every week, all of those factors have played a role in the let Russ cook movement coming to full fruition.
I'm glad you kind of touched on, you know, a little bit of that defense, like you mentioned, as well as the shootouts there. You know, we've got to talk about that Seahawks secondary. As an outsider, you know, I look at these scores every week and I'm seeing 30, 34, 31. What's going on with that Seahawks secondary right now? And why are they so susceptible right now to, you know, just allowing so many yards and so many points?
As I was telling you before the show, I'm not sure that the man upstairs knows what's wrong with the Seahawks secondary right now. I mean, when you look at the moves that John Schneider made during the offseason, they traded a fifth-round pick to get Quentin Dunbar from Washington. He was supposed to step in to the starting lineup across from a Pro Bowler in Shaquille Griffin, and now suddenly you have the best corner group that you've had in 3 years. And then in the secondary at the safety position, they traded a bunch of picks for Jamal Adams. He was supposed to come in and be an immediate difference maker for them, a guy that can play near the line of scrimmage, can create pressure on quarterbacks, one of the best blitzing safeties that I've ever seen. And Quandre Diggs, the five games he played for them last year, was playing at an all-pro level. He had three interceptions. One of them he took back to the house against the Rams, and it was a game the Rams ended up winning, but that was one of the few bright spots for Seattle in that game, was Diggs picking off Jared Goff and taking it back to the house. But it's just been an issue of chemistry and continuity in that back half of the defense. They have played one full game with those four players in the starting lineup, and it was week one. And then week two, Quandre Diggs is ejected late in the first quarter, so you spent most of that game without all four players. Then Quentin Dunbar misses two games with a knee injury that is still hobbling him. He looked horrific on Sunday against the Bills, and I think it's just he's not healthy. And so it's really hindering his ability to get the job done. Griffin's missed the last two games. And so ultimately, their best guy in the secondary the last few weeks has been Trey Flowers, the player that I think that they were hoping that Quentin Dunbar was going to be replacing in the starting lineup. And he's really come on the last couple of weeks. He's playing really good football, had a really rough start to the season, but he's been the one bright spot the last couple of weeks. They did get a couple sacks from Jamal Adams this past weekend, but I really think it comes back to the chemistry and continuity issue. These guys just have not played many games together, and you got to wonder about the schematics too. There's a reason Ken Norton Jr., the defensive coordinator, is under fire, even with the players they've been missing. You just look at the players in the lineup for Seattle each week, and you just wonder, how are they giving up 30 points a game with the pieces that they have? They just haven't been able to put things together. And then when it does seem like they finally are having a couple good drives, then they make costly penalties, and then they extend drives like they did against Buffalo in the second half. That prevented any comeback from being able to happen late in that football game. And so there are a number of issues at play here. You can question scheme. You can question the injuries that they've had. You can question how they've deployed some of the players. Is Quentin Dunbar a good fit? All of these things are being mentioned right now. It just feels like the coaches are just pulling straws, trying to see what they can do to try to get this group to play better and more to its potential.
You mentioned the pass rush and a guy like Jamal Adams, who they obviously love to bring on the blitz and is, like you mentioned, one of the best blitzing safeties that, you know, I can recall at the top of my head. But with that being said, you know, the Seahawks obviously traded for Carlos Dunlap, the defensive end from Cincinnati, about a week ago during the trade deadline. And, you know, I watched that game last week and he looked very active. He looked very good. And he's been obviously a very long time veteran in the league who's been very productive. So what do you think that addition of Dunlap can do to a pass rush that kind of has looked relatively stale thus far?
Well, if the first game was any indicator, he's going to be a massive difference maker. They were able to get seven sacks against the Bills. That was the only thing that went right on defense, but they were able to get some pressure with their front line, which has been the biggest Achilles heel for this team for the last 2 years, and now the secondary has replaced that. But I think that Carlos Dunlap has, for a long time, been one of the most underrated all-around defensive ends in the NFL. He had at least 7.5 sacks every year dating back to 2013. He's been durable. He swats passes away as well as any player I've ever seen with those long arms. He takes advantage of it. He's a really solid run defender, too. He had two excellent tackles for loss in the run game, and the Bills ran it like four times last week. So the couple times they actually ran the ball, he blew a couple of those plays up. And so I thought he had a really impressive debut. The Bengals were just running a different scheme at this point that wasn't a good fit. They wanted to get some younger guys in the lineup. They are in rebuild mode, as they have been for the last couple seasons. He is now playing for a team that believes it's a Super Bowl contender. The defense has a long way to go, but he can be one of those pieces that can get this unit over the hump a little bit in the second half. And they don't need to be an elite defense like they were in 2013 and 2014. If they could just be average with the weapons they've got on offense, then this team would be a viable Super Bowl contender. The way they're giving up yards right now, I mean, they're just giving it away like candy on Halloween. You're not going to be able to win a lot of football games doing that, even with Russell Wilson playing at the level that he has played this year. But I really think Dunlap last week having a sack, a couple quarterback hits, he was in the mix, a couple other plays that got sacks. You could definitely see the impact already up front. And so that is going to instantly make that front line much better. It's going to have a positive impact on some of the other young pass rushers that they have on this roster. And so they have to be feeling good about that. That's the one encouraging thing that came out of Sunday's loss in Buffalo.
Corbin, man, I appreciate you sharing some in-depth knowledge on the Seahawks, and hopefully Rams listeners learn something about the upcoming matchup here in week 10 between the Los Angeles Rams and the Seattle Seahawks. But Coming up in just a moment, Corbin and I are going to flip the tables here, and he's going to ask me his questions that pertain to the Los Angeles Rams.
As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Week 10 Locked On Podcast crossover special. Sosa Cremenges of Locked On Rams. I'm Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks. This is a matchup that fans in Seattle and LA are always looking forward to. Twice a year, these teams get together, and they've had some outstanding matchups, aside from that one game a few years ago that the Rams absolutely blew out the Seahawks at CenturyLink Field. For the most part, their matchups have been very close. Last year, the Seahawks won their game at home, missed field goal at the end by Greg Zuerlein, and then when they went to LA in December, the Seahawks offense went MIA, and the Rams ended up winning that one pretty convincingly. And these two teams come in with pretty similar records, Seattle at 6-2, the Rams at 5-3. So Sosa, it's time to pick your brain a little bit here. Rams are a familiar opponent, but there are some big changes here. As Pete Carroll was mentioning earlier today, there are some different innovations on both sides of the football than what they have seen from the Rams in the past. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. The Rams are 6th in the NFL in offensive yardage, but they're just 21st in points scored. And when you see that wide of a discrepancy, especially when it's the yardage that you're higher up in the rankings than points, that could be a little bit concerning. What has been the biggest thing setting this offense back in terms of turning all of those yards into points on the scoreboard this year?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues, and this has been an issue really for the Rams dating back multiple seasons, is their inefficiency in the red zone. You know, they get to the red zone relatively often. And like you mentioned, they don't have an issue moving the football. You know, they can run the ball effectively, and they've done so really all season. And then, you know, the rest of their offense is based off of what they can do in that running game. You know, they like to run a lot of play action, a lot of jet motion, a lot of motions, a lot of sweeps from receivers. So they have very many ways to manufacture yardage and big plays. And, you know, that's been a theme for the Rams really dating back to 2017 since Sean McVay's hiring. But again, like I mentioned, you know, a lot of these red zone woes go back to the same time when Sean McVay got hired. The Rams are getting down there often. But, you know, the case in this season has been they'll get down there and then, you know, they shoot themselves in the foot by getting a penalty on 1st and 10 or 2nd and 10. And then once they get into these less than ideal situations in the red zone, Sean McVay becomes very, very conservative. I think that, you know, he's a little bit concerned with Jared Goff's decision-making ability when it comes to the red zone. You can tell that he prefers to get the ball into the hands of receivers. He's running a lot of receiver screens in these 3rd and long situations in the red zone. And so it feels like on a lot of these trips when, you know, they get behind the chains and they don't stay ahead of the chains and they can't stay in manageable 2nd or 3rd down situations, that they almost wave the white flag and they basically throw a prayer in the hopes that, you know, a 3rd and 10 screen will, you know, convert, which it often doesn't. So I feel like, you know, the red zone woes are something that have dated back to a few seasons now. And it's something that the Rams need to clean up because they need to become a lot more efficient at scoring points, like you mentioned. For an offense that's creating so much yardage, there's a huge discrepancy between, you know, how productive they are going up and down the fields. But as soon as they get into the 20s, I feel like, you know, their offense becomes a little bit lackluster. And so that's definitely one of the biggest areas for the offense to clean up moving forward.
And it's funny, kind of ironic you're mentioning that, because the last time these teams played, the Rams kept getting in the red zone, and the Seahawks had absolutely no resistance whatsoever when they were down there in that game. And that's why they were able to build that 21-3 lead at halftime, and the Seahawks just never could get things going in the second half enough to really make it a game. But sticking with Jared Goff here, because he is one of the most baffling quarterbacks to me when I'm watching film and I'm evaluating him. He's one of the most bipolar quarterbacks that I've watched. There are games that I see him and I'm like, now he truly looks like what you would expect from a number one overall pick. 5 years into the league, he's making really good decisions, throwing the ball over the field, outstanding anticipation. And then you can turn around and watch him the next week. I'm thinking about the 49ers game here explicitly. That game, it looked like he had blinders in his eyes and he just didn't know what he was doing. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get with him week in, week out. But that being said, it doesn't seem like the Seahawks have gotten to see that bad Jared Goff very often, at least since his rookie season. This has been an opponent that he always seems to be licking his lips about. And I would think this year, with the weapons that he's got on the outside, that he's going to be especially eager for the chance to go against that maligned secondary that I talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah, I think you summed it up, you know, very well, that Jared Goff is a guy who can look, you know, borderline elite 1 week and then like an undrafted free agent the next. And it's very maddening. The inconsistencies have continued really throughout his whole career. But, you know, I feel like Sean McVay is his own worst enemy at times. You know, the last week, the last game the Rams had in week 8 against the Miami Dolphins, you know, you go into that game where the Dolphins are one of the worst run defenses and are one of the most efficient pass defenses. And somehow, you know, at the end of the game, Jared Goff has 61 passing attempts. So, you know, I question some of those play calling tendencies and some of the game planning. But, you know, like you mentioned, going back throughout the last couple of years, at least, the Rams and the Seahawks have played a lot. And Jared Goff has largely done a very solid job in those games. Now, you know, he's a guy who's not going to create out of structure. He's not very mobile. He's not very creative. And things are made, you know, essentially easier for him by way of a guy like Sean McVay with his play calling, a lot of motion, a lot of play action, a lot of moving his launch points. He's not really letting him stand back there in 5- and 7-step traditional drops and throwing the ball 40 times or 50 times a game. It's a lot of, you know, schemed production. And so I feel like, you know, when the offensive line is giving a guy like Goff, who doesn't have that creative mobility or ability to extend plays, essentially, when he does have a clean pocket, when he can go through his progressions, when he can play within the structure of a play, how it's designed, he can look very good. You know, when he gets a clean pocket, he can step into his throws and he can be a very accurate quarterback. Now, once things go haywire a little bit and, you know, he's blitzed, and that's something that concerns me about the Seahawks and a guy like Jamal Adams, who they're going to bring off the edge there, is that, you know, when he gets a guy in his face, when he gets pressured, when the pocket starts to get muddied, when he needs to go through progressions and start to create out of structure, that's when the issues come. And so, you know, Sean McVay is doing the best that he can to essentially make him what, you know, could be considered a game manager. And I think he's done a very good job at that, you know, throughout the last 4 years. But yeah, we've seen how things can go south really quickly. And like you mentioned, you know, it changes from week to week. So, so long as the Rams can give, you know, Jared Goff a clean pocket and just let him play within the structure of the offense, he's got a really good shot to be a really good quarterback. But it's, you know, as soon as things kind of go off the train tracks there, we can see a guy who clearly struggles at times.
Let's go to the defensive side of the ball, because that to me has really been the tale of this Rams team this year. Because last season, we know about Aaron Donald and some of the really good defensive players that the Rams have. But there were some games last season where the defense, the play just fell off tremendously. They made a change at coordinator. And I still think Wade Phillips is an outstanding coach, but sometimes you just got to make difficult decisions. Sometimes it's time to move on from coaches, even ones that have a long track record of success like Phillips has in this league. And they brought in Brandon Staley as their new defensive coordinator. They're second in the league in points against, second in yards against. So they've been really good in both of those categories in a season where a lot of teams, I think defense has become optional this season. It's been really difficult to watch. If you like defense this year, everybody's scoring a ton of points, but the Rams have been one of the few teams that have done a nice job there of limiting opponents defensively in terms of yards and points. How much of that credit falls to the new coordinator, and how much does it go to some of the new pieces that they have brought in through the draft and free agency?
I was talking about this earlier today, and You know, I think a lot of the credit has to go to defensive coordinator Brandon Staley. That was, like you mentioned, a tough hire that the Rams had to make, moving on from a legend like Wade Phillips in the offseason. And that was a move that, you know, a lot of people, myself included, were very critical of. You know, replacing a guy like Wade Phillips is never easy, and especially for a first-time defensive coordinator in the NFL and a guy like Staley. But, you know, he's done a marvelous job. I mean, he comes from the Vic Fangio tree. He runs, you know, a primarily quarters-based defense where he's going to run a lot of cover four. But the thing that I think makes Staley so effective and why the Rams have played so well is that they've been able to disguise their coverages a lot. What they're lining up as pre-snap is hardly what they're doing post-snap. There's a lot of rotation from the safeties, a lot of rotation from the cornerbacks. He's brought a lot of players in the blitz. He's been very creative, trying to get a hat on a hat across the line of scrimmage and single up Aaron Donald as much as he possibly can. And it's no secret that, you know, Aaron Donald's being way more productive this season than he was last season. And that's part and due to Staley's ability to scheme him less, you know, double and triple teams. And so you look at the secondary, you look at their ability to be varied in coverage on the back end. They're running a lot of different coverages from, you know, quarters, cover four, cover six, cover one, cover three. They can play two high structures with safeties back there. They can play single high structures. And they have a lot of versatility on that defensive side of the ball. So, you know, having guys like Jalen Ramsey, having three or four pretty good safeties allows you to rotate. And they've done a lot of different things, you know, pre-snap, post-snap, lining up guys in different areas, bringing different guys on the blitz. And I think it's done a very good job of, you know, confusing offenses, confusing offensive linemen, scheming pressure, and, you know, forcing quarterbacks to play the way they don't want to play, which is, you know, under heavy siege. And so, you know, I think a lot of the credit has to go to Brandon Staley. And I think, you know, the early returns thus far are that he might not be back here next season. You know, he might be a head coaching candidate. So he's done a great job. And I don't think that, you know, you can give him enough credit for what he's done through the first eight games this season.
Seahawks fans now are extremely jealous hearing about a team that knows how to disguise coverages and make it that you don't know what's coming blitz-wise, because it seems like the predictability for Seattle's defense, especially the last couple of weeks, has been pretty obvious. And who knows, it could be about all the moving parts that they've had in the lineup. But the last question I've got here, this really pertains to both of us, because I am so looking forward to watching DK Metcalf against Jalen Ramsey. They already had kind of a heated exchange last December, their first matchup against each other, and everybody knows what DK Metcalf has done this season. I talk about this time and time again. I used to play a ton of Madden. I haven't liked the recent games that much, but I always remember creating receivers that were like 6'5", 240 pounds, and had 99 speed, and I thought, well, that'll never happen in real life. And then DK Metcalf came to the NFL. And so he has been a phenomenal talent here the last first two seasons. He's really come on as an all-pro player, but this is going to be one of his toughest matchups going against Jalen Ramsey. I guess my big question for you, the Rams are keeping tight-lipped on this. Do you think Jalen Ramsey travels the entire game with DK Metcalf, or are they going to pick and choose and have some time where he's lined up against Tyler Lockett, who is an elite receiver in his own right?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to say. Like you mentioned, they haven't really shared their plans, and I don't think they will prior to the game and to the kickoff. But with that being said, you know, a guy like Ramsey, he started on the boundary this season and played a lot of the first maybe 4 or 5 weeks on the boundary. And then suddenly the Rams kicked him inside to the nickel position, or, you know, the position that they call the star position, in hopes of letting him get closer to the football and start to make plays on the football. And, you know, they've been bringing him in the blitz a lot, sort of like a Jamal Adams. They've let him do a lot of interesting things in terms of coverage from that nickel spot. And so it's tough to say. You know, I think you would want to put a guy like Jalen Ramsey on a guy like DK Metcalf for probably the entirety of the game. I mean, they match up well in terms of size. I don't think the Rams have another corner who can be, you know, as physical as a guy as like Ramsey can, especially against a big, powerful dude like DK Metcalf. So, you know, logically, I would think that, you know, Ramsey might play more snaps on the boundary in this game because that's where DK Metcalf's going to line up, and that they would get a lot of one-on-ones against each other. So with that being said, I do think that they probably will match up more often than not, but I don't think he's necessarily going to travel and shadow with him because, like you said, you know, Tyler Lockett is an elite receiver in his own right, and, you know, he's going to be moving around the formation too. He's going to move in the slot. And the Rams might like that matchup as well, leaving a guy like Ramsey in the slot to cover a guy like Lockett. but it remains to be seen. I'm excited to see this matchup. It's definitely, if you're a football fan, this is definitely something you're going to want to keep your eyes on. It's probably the best matchup of any positional group in this week's slate of games, I think. And it could very well be what dictates the outcome of this game. You know, DK Metcalf is a guy who can get vertical, who can make big plays, who's going to score, you know, huge touchdowns. Obviously, Seahawks fans know that. And Jalen Ramsey is, you know, a game changer in his own right. He has barely allowed any yards in his coverage this season. I believe less than 170 in terms of, you know, allowing yards per target. He's one of the most productive corners in football right now. And he's got the versatility to play inside and outside. And you know Jalen Ramsey's going to talk a lot. You know he's going to try to get in the receiver's head. He's going to get physical, and things could get heated out there. So, man, I'm really excited to see this. It's really any football lover's dream getting to see a matchup like this between DK Metcalf and Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, and Metcalf has been a little bit more vocal on the field this year too. He's been willing to talk a little bit more smack on the field, and you can do that when you are making plays the way he has this year, almost 800 receiving yards already this season for Metcalf. And so I think this is going to be a really good game. I think two evenly matched teams in regard that I think the Seahawks offense is the more potent, obviously, of the two. And obviously the Rams defense has been really, really good this season. But that being said, I don't know that they have seen an offense quite like the Seahawks, maybe Buffalo. That game, Buffalo, we can tell you from our experience in Seattle that the Bills have a pretty darn good offense as well. But I think this is going to be a really fun divisional matchup, the first of two between these teams. And obviously a lot on the line with the Seahawks barely clinging on to a one-game lead in the NFC West. Where can our listeners find all your stuff, Sosa?
Yeah, you can find me at QB's MVP on Twitter. I'm very active there. And then obviously you can find everything related to the Rams at the Locked On Rams podcast. We're shooting out episodes every day, just like you guys are over at Locked On Seahawks. And that's about it. You know, I write it for PFF as well. I dabble in a handful of different areas.
So you can follow Sosa on Twitter. Obviously, you can also follow Locked On Rams and keep track of Seattle's bitter divisional rival. It's been a fun show. I'm really looking forward to this game. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL, and you can follow Locked On Seahawks on social media as well. Enjoy the game, Seahawks and Rams fans. Thanks for listening.